Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else to keep.
He was massive. Legs, ass, fit. But I burst out laughing watching him.
What a weekend of club county finals, lads. So, like, I mean, it was full of action, full of excitement. Loads of favourites beaten. Ayr Óg were beaten, going for five in a row. Cross McGlen were beaten for the second year in a row. Corrafin, the great Corrafin, were beaten. Road were beaten. St. Lomans, who were favourites, could only draw late on. So we've loads to get through today. But I suppose we have to start with the big news of the weekend. And that is the news that the McIntyres have made it to the next round of Ireland's Fittest Family. Like, I mean, this is just the showstopper of the whole weekend, Niall. Talk us through it.
I'd say those county finals now are surely bigger than me jumping up on bales and carrying sandbags around the place.
Bales of straw. I saw this leg. I didn't see it all. I had to put children to bed. But the bales of straw, you were jumping over them like a gazelle, and your poor father at 60 years of age, he was struggling to get back up that hill.
Yeah, you'd think I was jumping over bales my whole life nearly, wouldn't you? And the funny thing is, we wouldn't have even done bales in a few years. We'd usually do a silage pit, so there wouldn't be much bales around the place at home.
Right. So you're not in practice. Like, you, Jesus, some performance considering you're out of practice.
I just said, like, there was no real technique to it. I just said I'd stand back, run and jump at it, and it got me over them eventually anyway. Yeah. But the father, he was struggling going up that hill, wasn't he?
Oh, he was struggling coming back up, if anybody hadn't seen it. But just before we leave that, there was a purple team on the other side, and I think their tactics was to run into the bales of straw instead of jump over them. But anyways, listen, congratulations. So where are you at now? Are you in a quarter final, or how many more rounds?
Yeah, we're through to the quarter final now. I think that's on in 2 weeks' time. So I think that's in the lake. So there'll be a bit of fun there, a few of us falling into rivers and jumping into lakes. And
right.
We had a bit of fun. It'll be funny to watch it.
Okay, so you know all the story here, but you're being very secretive about the whole thing. Anyways, on to the GAA now. Mount Bellew, my lock. We say they're the biggest story to start off with here, Lee. Like, I mean, you know, the pretenders in Galway for a good few years. They got over the line for the first time since 1966. They lost a good few finals, four of the last six maybe, and Mike, you know, ended up beating Corrafin, you know, the best team in Ireland probably in the history of club football, arguably. So maybe that's the best one to start with.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, for them to finally get over the line, I think it was 1986 that they'd last won it. So, I mean, you think about how long ago that was. That was like Diego Maradona, hand of God sort of thing going on at that stage.
Right, yeah,
and Val Daly was captain back then, and he's the manager now. And now he's got two sons, Michael and John, playing on this team. So, like, that's a lovely story in itself. But, I mean, it's been a long time coming. They've reached something like, is it four or five finals since 2009? And I think they lost most of them, if not all of them, bar one, two, Corrafin. So, like, even just mentally, you know, having to go up against their tormentors again and getting over the line, it must have been huge. They'll be partying all week for sure.
Big time. Like, I mean, what surprised me is how easy it was, Niall. Like, I mean, it was easy. They took the wind in the first half. They dominated the game. Corrafin couldn't get out of their half. Like, it was incredible. Corrafin trying to run everything out of their half and getting turned over, and they couldn't get their kickouts past Michael Daly and his midfield partner, Matthew Barrett. was just like, I'd say Mount Belvedere couldn't believe this. Like, this was an easy win for them.
Yeah, Cara Finn just looked like, and you could nearly see it from the very stage of the game, they kind of looked like a tired sort of a team, and they were kind of, it seemed as if they were dead men walking, and you could see it after 10 minutes. Like, usually you'd expect the sort of the flow and pass and moves, but any time they did, they only put them together once or twice, and then I think there was shots dropping short, and it was just very un-Cara Finn like. But Mount Belvedere, there's some amount of big men, like, they're a big, real fit team, and should they beat Cara Finn in the semi-final last year as well? So, like, they've had a lot of heartbreak in recent years, like losing finals and then, like, losing to Cara Finn, then beating Cara Finn, then losing finals. So, like, it was huge for them to get over the line yesterday, and they played like they deserved to win it. Like,
yeah, the game was over when Owen Finnerty got the goal. Like, I mean, I headed on to watch Portlaoise after that, but he was class in the game, Lee. Like, I mean, you know, he just has that lovely kick and style where he's complete control over the ball and buried the goal brilliantly. And he played underage for Galway, but kind of looks like a fella who might not be fast enough for the intercounty game, or might, you know, might not get as fit as is required for that level of football. But like a club level, like, I mean, this lad is just an assassin.
Yeah, well, regardless of county, he'll be a club legend now forever. He's sort of cemented his name into that history, and the goal was brilliant, to be fair. He was coming off the shoulder, and there was sort of one, the defender did well, to be fair, to try and split the two forwards, you know, and not get drawn out for as long as he could. But when the ball came to him, he'd already made the run, he had that much momentum for it, and he went for par, and he sort of thankfully hit the roof of the net, like. And but he, you know, he knew what he was doing. He was just so clinical, and so clinical the whole match that he picked up the man of the match award as well, I think. So, like, he's just the star man for them. And if not for Galway, like, I'm sure he's happy enough being the star for his club.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Michael and John Daly, we mentioned them. They were very good as well. And they were a huge loss for Galway last year. The inter-county team, neither of them. John was injured and Michael didn't commit. So it'd be nice for Galway to see them back. You were mentioning Cara Finn, just didn't have the same zip about them. And a lot of teams that are on the go an awful long time, you know, that's probably something that happens. Because, like, I mean, they weren't missing that many. Of, say, you go back to the team that destroyed Dr. Crokes in the final. That was like the pinnacle of this Cara Finn team. Dr. Crokes' great team. Missing Gary Sice, who was a very important leader for them. Missing Ian Burke, missing Kieran Fitzgerald. Mike Farraher came on as a sub. He didn't start. You're not looking at a huge transition. A lot of their big names were still there. It's just, they just didn't have the zip, did they?
Yeah, it's not like they're like too old of a team either, and I suppose that can just happen sometimes.
Mileage,
like when you've won so much, maybe there's a year when the hunger just isn't there as much. And you could kind of see that in Cara Finn. There was times when Mount Belvedere kind of were allowed to sort of just play around a bit nearly at leisure. Like, and it was very unlike Cara Finn. But I suppose when you've won so much, it can be hard maybe to get up for it every single year. Like,
yeah, and maybe to be fair to them, like, I mean, a lot of years in Galway, they would just get out of Galway by the skin of their teeth. And then they'll get through. Then they'll get through the Connacht Club Championship a little bit easier, weirdly enough. And then by the time they get to Croke Park, they're destroying teams. So, like, I mean, you know, they're starting to get caught in Galway now, rather than, you know, move on and kind of build maybe and get everybody back for the later stages of the championship. In Clare, Ballyhea, they'd never won a county title before 2016. Now they have three. In 6 years, after a late rally got them over the line against Aina Kilnamona. Niall Deasy scored 1-9 for Ballyhea. He joins us on the line now. How's it going today, Niall?
Yeah, brilliant. We're just still enjoying the celebrations anyway after yesterday. And I suppose it's as sweet as anyone when the third one, especially given the amount of changes and players that have kind of we've lost over the years, and that it's almost a new team again this year. So it's just as sweet as every other one.
Yeah, no. So where are the celebrations? I was reading there isn't even a pub in Ballyhea. It's so small.
Well, I suppose it's on the border. I suppose the local inn in Drumquin. But yeah, I suppose that's our pub for Ballyhea, and I suppose it's technically in the next parish back in Ballinacaddy. But that's where we go to.
Right. Okay. That's where you go for the few. But and come here. Like, I mean, it's a strange situation in that, you know, Ballyhea. You said there was a lot of turnover of players there from 2016, and we know you obviously won the Munster that year and got all the way to an All Ireland final. But like, I mean, you pull in a lot of footballers from the surrounding areas because, you know, there isn't any hurling clubs in West Clare. Is that right?
Yeah, I suppose we're probably the last hurling club before kind of West Clare. So any isolated players. I thought they naturally come to ourselves, and I suppose they've a lot of the players we had today have played the whole way up underage with Ballyhale, and now they're just getting on to the senior level.
I was reading a stat that you have 9 dual players and they play with five different football clubs.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge for Robbie and lads to manage yeah. that, but with football clubs training every evening or whatever, but yeah, no, it works out, in fairness. I suppose we've Lizzie Casey, we've Kilmahill, Cora Clare, Coolmean, and Shannon Gales as well. So there's a good few different football clubs pulling into Ballyhale.
Yeah, and Aina Kilimona then would have the similar situation pulling in other kind of football in clubs. I'm wondering, is there, Aina Kilimona are very close to you. Is there a rivalry? Would that be a big rivalry?
Not really, to be honest. Like, I suppose Aina only formed, say, I think it was 15 years ago, so like, and we Ballyhale would have been B underage a lot, and they would have been in different divisions and that, so we wouldn't have actually played each other a huge pile,
right.
Although we're two very similar clubs, kind of rural clubs, and have a lot of footballers in that playing for us, so we'd be very, very similar.
You're kind of blowing the myth that footballers can't play hurling. It's usually the other way around. Any hurler can play football.
Yeah, it's just the way we play in that, like, I suppose once you have a bit of success, it's very easy to get footballers to come in and to do jobs that other lads don't want. And it works for us in that, like, we might have a few lads that get all the scores, like, but other lads, the footballers of the engines and that, they do an awful lot of the work behind the scenes, and they're happy to do it once the team's successful. So it's just kind of worked out for us. I don't know whether there was any master plan there or anything, but it seems to be working for us.
So what I'm reading from that is you bring in 5 or 6 footballers to do all the dog tackling and donkey work, and then the hurlers kind of finish it off on the scoreboard.
So everyone has their own roles, I suppose. That's kind of worked out a bit. But
Kavir, talk to us about the match, because it was like, I mean, you were behind for most of the match. Your penalty got you back on level terms. That was the 51st minute. And then Aina Kilnamona went 2 up, and, you know, probably wasn't looking good for you then at that stage.
No, it wasn't. And to be honest, like, we haven't been scoring a huge pile all year. We've just been kind of grinding out wins and that. Like, I think we played 6 games this year. We won 4 by a point, drew 1, and then won kind of handy enough.
Wow.
So we weren't really putting teams away or anything like that. But we just managed to grind those teams, and I suppose we just had a bit of confidence to do that again today.
That was it. I would think he scored 4 of the last 5 points of the match. Maybe just that bit of experience on the home straight.
Yeah, it could have been. I suppose it's the fitness of the lads as well. Like, they're all animal fish. And we managed to do that in the kind of 4th quarter of a lot of games to get the better teams, and we seem to pip teams by a point a lot of the time.
There was a video doing the rounds of Tony Kelly running out onto the field after the match with a bit of a limp on him. He did the warm-up. What kind of mind games were going on here?
I think he'd have struggled to get Tony to put down a hurley. he just wanted to have a puck on the day. I think he talked out, but I know he's been a huge part of it, kind of behind the scenes. And I suppose you can see he's went out to coach teams and read the game, quite similar to what Paul did and Paul Flanagan in 2018 when he got injured. He was pretty much a selector for the year, so like Tony just found a new role and a new way to help out.
Right, but so it had nothing to do with maybe having Aina Kilnamona thinking he might be playing.
No, I don't think so. Well, I wasn't aware of it anyway.
Right, okay, but it's a huge win, like without Tony, because I know all the headlines when you do win, obviously because Tony's such an exceptional player, arguably the best in the country, to do it without him, you know, it must be huge for the club, you know, to be able to achieve that.
Yeah, no, and I suppose like we played a couple of games without him now, and we've kind of had to adapt the way that we play. A lot of the time, like, the lads around the middle can just kind of give a hand pass and Tony run onto it and drive it over the bar.
Yeah.
It makes their life very easy, but now they just have to take it on and try and get it into the full forward line of work, scores, and I suppose like the likes of Mossy and Ryan Griffin Aaron Griffin at the full forward line of the game, this year, Colin O'Connor has been getting points. We just had to change the way we were playing because Tony's not in the side anymore. And it means, yeah, I suppose it means a lot that we can still win games even when Tony isn't there. It just shows that we're not a one-man team or anything like that. And it feels how important the rest of the lads are, to be honest.
Yeah, I saw Anthony Daly given out in the Examiner that the game was put back for 15 minutes. There was only one gate open or something like that, and Aina Kilnamona stayed out in the field after the warm-up and ye went into the stand. Did you go in and sit down and wait it out, or was it much of a disruption?
No, it wasn't any real disruption from our side of things. Like we just went up back up to the stand and took 10 minutes of a break. Instead of kind of poking the ball around and being nervous and whatever else on the field, we just thought it'd be better to go back up to the stand and start again. I don't think it had any real impact on us, to be honest.
Right, okay. And come here, listen, you've been in with Clare for a couple of years now. Like, I mean, I haven't been able to stamp, a full-time starting position down, or how has it gone? Because, like, I mean, you score very, very heavily on a regular basis for Ballyhea.
Yeah, no, I've actually left the panel since last year. But I just can't do the training, to be honest. I've had a lot of hamstring injuries over the years, and I just cannot train. Like, to be honest, with Ballyhea, if I train twice a week, I'll be doing well.
Right.
That's all I can do. And the week leading up to games, I might not train at all. I suppose that's kind of where my hamstring injuries have kind of left me, and I just can't really do the training required with Clare, so I decided to pull away last year.
Right. Obviously, playing for their club, that's accepted, but you know, at inter-county level, you have to be you have to be training every single session.
Oh yeah, like you don't really have any chance unless you're there every day and you're able to do all the sessions with GPS monitors and every other sort of thing that they have these days. You can't really get away with doing any less.
No, well, that's true. Me and you are both ex-Parnells players. You finished in Dublin? I'm not going to accuse you of being being a big money transfer or anything like I'm always accused of.
I know, that was just a bit of crack for a year when I was up there. I just ended up playing with them in the league for a year, but no, we're based back at home again now. I work for a company in Dublin, but I'm working kind of in Clare the whole time, so there's no plans to go back up again anyway.
Right, okay. That was when you were living in Dublin, and like, I mean, I was thinking maybe that you're still living in Dublin and the hamstrings are getting tight driving down from Dublin, but you're back in Clare. Like, I mean, can you not fix these hamstring issues, or what are they telling you it's coming from?
To be honest, it's just I constantly strain them, and I've done my left hamstring, I'd say, more than 10 times, and my right one, I'd say, nearly the same. I suppose just every time you do it, it gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
I suppose I've gotten to the stage now where I don't know if there's any real solution to it.
Are you building them up? Are you making them stronger? Like, I had terrible trouble with my hamstrings as well, but looking back on it, I never probably did the work to make them stronger.
Yeah, like I think what it probably comes down to is my own build. Like my legs wouldn't be I'm quite tall and have long legs, and then kind of have a bigger upper body. So it's very difficult for them to carry it.
I suppose
it's my own physical makeup as opposed to trying to bulk them up and get away with it. And I suppose once you've done them a few times, you're kind of, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, no, it definitely. And come here, you've Ballygunner now, so you're not quite, nothing's going to be easy from here on in. You couldn't have got a harder draw in Munster.
Yeah, sure, that's always the same way with us, I suppose. We never take the easy route.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, we wouldn't have even thought about the Ballygunner game before today even. We'll worry about that next week.
So can you confirm that Tony has got the operation, or he hasn't got the operation, or can we see him completely surprising Ballygunner in a couple of weeks?
Tony won't be playing. He's got the operation, I think, 4 weeks ago, and he's like, you've probably seen him on the sideline. He's probably able to jog around, but if he was to run it, I'd say it'd be a different story. And especially once he's got the operation, there's no real point in him trying to kill himself, because he could end up having to get it redone or whatever else. So I'd say there's no pressure on him at all to play.
No, and just one final one on that. Were you debating as a team whether he gets the operation or whether he puts it off?
No, I suppose it's his own decision, really.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, if the team can't really tell him, whatever, like, Tony's his own man, so he can make his own decisions on it. He was in pain for quite a long time with it, and then I think he just bit the bullet and said, hey, I have to get this done, because he was only coming on as a sub in our last game against Kilkenny that he played. There was no point in kind of just bearing the pain and making it a longer rehab process for next year, because it could be a couple of months before he's back playing again. So I think he just decided to bite the bullet and get it done.
Yeah, he's probably right. Well, come here, Niall, I'm not going to keep you any longer. I know you've found a nice quiet room there to get away from the celebration, so we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and congratulations on yesterday.
No matter, thanks, Alan.
Yeah, good stuff from Niall there, and it's nice that we can confirm that while Tony Kelly was togged out, he just wanted to get a hurl in his hand. He just wanted to be out into the field. Ballygunner have nothing to worry about. He's not coming down the tracks. He had the operation.
Yeah, I'd say Tony Kelly lives with a hurley in his hand, and he was just mad to get out for a few pucks, maybe after being cooped up the last few weeks. But you could see at the end of the game, I thought it was brilliant. Clare FM had the video on Twitter, the final whistle blown, and sure, it was only a 1 point win, and the subs are running down the stairs, are running down the steps to get out in the field, but Tony Kelly's the first man out, and he's hopping up and down, and you could see he was half limping at the time, like, but the excitement and the adrenaline, I suppose, the buzz just brought him through. And isn't that sure, like, what it means to the club? Like for a lad like him, he wasn't playing, but it's great to see how much it means to him, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Talk to us about this tip match. I missed this. I was at Portlaoise. I saw some highlights on it. There's a bit of a talking point. Obviously, this is Loughmore Castellini again, never saying die. Like an absolutely sensational club. 8 points down at one stage, got back. Second half fight back, 217 to 23 points. A sideline at the end that Loughmore Castellini were going a bit mad at, that it was blown up on the sideline without the sideline being allowed to be taken.
Yeah, like it was a dubious enough sideline as it was. It was kind of just about over the line. And Liam Tracy, the Loughmore full forward, he kind of picked it up as it was over the line. But the linesman, he flagged and he was given the sideline down the field. And Noel McGrath was on his way over. He had scored a sideline about 15, 20 minutes
scored
earlier.
Scored one and missed one as well, right?
Missed one 5 minutes earlier. But often you'd find when a lad misses one, the next one, you know, he can kind of put it right. Like a golfer after missing a short putt or something. But Noel McGrath, it's a huge, like, you know, to have a cut and a cut to win the game, like that would have been a huge thing. Like, especially when you have someone like Noel McGrath who can score them. And like it was disappointing. It's a strange way to sort of, it's hard to know what to do. Like, it was 30 or 40 seconds overtime played at that stage. And
right,
there was a good few kind of scuffles around the midfield. And then the ball just broke out for a sideline. So I'd say the ref was about to blow his whistle. But it's still a bit frustrating for Loughmore.
That's the thing, Lee. What do you think of this? Because if that ball had gone wide, the referee wouldn't blow it up. He'd allow the goalkeeper to puck it out and he'd blow it while the game is restarted. Whereas on a sideline, it's unusual to see a game blown out. Sometimes you see half-time getting blown up maybe on a sideline, but full-time whistle generally is blown when the ball is in play. So I suppose that's what Loughmore would be complaining about, that why weren't we given the chance? I suppose the only time it would be in play, Loughmore hoping, is while it's sailing over the bar. But you don't usually see games being blown up when the ball's out of play, do you?
No, not usually. The referee usually lets the kick out or the puck out or whatever to be back into play before they blow it up. I mean, it's probably enough for them to say that, like, they can complain about it, you know. They'll feel hard done by, for sure, especially when you've got someone with the actual capability of potentially sailing it over the bar. So yeah, I mean, they can feel hard done by, for sure.
Yeah, no, they definitely. John McGrath got his fifth man of the match in a row, so he's been man of the match in the quarterfinal, semi-final and final of the hurling, and the semi-final and the quarterfinal and the semi-final of the football. It's outrageous now.
Like, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Like, and I was one.
And this a fella who was struggling with tip this year, talking about making a statement that I ain't gone anywhere.
Yeah, there was lads saying we need to wrap John McGrath and Cottle Mull now after this and just let him bring it into Tipperary next year. But yeah, I put that stat up on GA Joe because a lot of people are saying to give man of the matches for quarterfinals in Tipperary. And but in the local paper, the Nina Gargan, they always give a man of the match, and it was John McGrath every single week, and he's the same then the hurling that was on RTE and the hurling on TG Cahir. And like, he's just a man that's on fire at the moment. Like, he kind of starts out corner forward, but like, he pops up, he's winning dirty ball in his own half back line these days, and he's winning rucks, and then he's coming out, he's taking a shot at the goal, and he's just playing with so much confidence, like, between the two codes. And you can see it when Loughmore are playing, when the ball gets down to John McGrath, like, the crowd and the team, the whole thing, they kind of think that there's something coming here. Like, and like, Noel is obviously a tremendous leader for them as well, but John is the man this year. Like,
yeah, he definitely seems to be. So Loughmore now have to play a replay, and then next week they have to play the football final, and then they have to play the replay, which is going to be, it was 15 this weekend, it's 17 games in a row. Which is just sensational. Listen, it's enjoyable for them because they're big games, Lee. They wanted an extra week. I don't think they're going to get it after the football final, because I suppose if they lose that football final, you know, the heartbreak of that and then having to get back up for a game, I think they should be allowed the two-week break myself. What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's only fair, but like, it is a big ask on them, especially if they lose in the football final too. that's a lot of games in consecutive weeks, you know, and a lot of, like you say, big games. So you got to get yourself, you got to recover quickly. You got to get yourself amped up again and mentally prepared and do everything else that needs to go into it. Everything during the week, you know what it's like when a big game, like everything during the week and everything that day leads towards the match in terms of what you're eating, what you're thinking about it. Am I getting enough sleep? You know, it can become a bit obsessive. So seeing it all coming like consecutively and as fast as that, it is a big demand on them. So yeah, I mean, if they can afford to give them the extra week, they definitely should.
It might impact on the Munster club. And I suppose if they'd lost this hurling match, they would only have a week to get over the football final, Niall. So it probably just works the opposite way around now.
I was reading this morning that it's not going to overlap the Munster club. I think that must be 4 weeks away or something at this stage.
So do you think they'll get it?
Well, Frankie McGrath was saying in his post-match interview, he said that, you know, after all that they've done and after all the games they've played, you know, they could do with a week off. And I definitely wouldn't begrudge them a week off.
I wonder, are their bodies just used to playing every week and that the extra weekend might just throw them off sync altogether? Now, psychologically, if they'd lose the football, but if they won the football, I think they might, what would be the harm in bloody playing the next week? Because they're used to it, so used to it, that a 2 week break now might be like, Jesus, what'll we do this weekend?
It would be strange, wouldn't it? Because I'd say the training these days, like, it's obviously very light. I'd say they're going in on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And like the buzz from last weekend's match is kind of still carrying them through. And like when you're coming in after a win, training is always like, you know, it's a bit of a buzz, and then you have another game coming. So they're not training, I'd say, too hard. You know, yeah. It's just match fitness keeping them going. And yeah, you would think the extra, like another week, a week without hurling or football, it'd be strange for them anyway. And they'd react the same way.
Well, that's the thing. So if they were to lose the football final and then the 2 weeks to the hurling, they could go to Tuesday night and run the shite out of them and really annoy all the players. Like, I mean, because usually if you have 2 weeks, the Tuesday or Wednesday, you might give them a good hard session. You know, and that whole kind of, you know, routine they have, Lee, would be completely ripped up.
Yeah, well, they say, like, I mean, footballers are creatures of habit, aren't they? I mean, everyone tries to fall into a routine and a good one at that, to try and prepare themselves for matches. But I was just thinking, if they give them the break, how does the management take advantage of that? Does it mean that the Tuesday session is they're suddenly doing sprints and stuff again, whilst before, because their match fitness is obviously where it needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, that's where they're at. It's just like Niall said, tipping over or just keeping on top of that. So what would they do with that extra week, to be fair? I mean, do you push them? I mean, I don't think they would, because you're not going to get them much fitter now at this stage. What they do with the weekend off, they probably should still do something together just to keep that sort of group mentality of like the Saturday or the Sunday is when we'll, you know, team is team time. But it just won't have the same pressures, which can be mentally fatiguing as well. But I see your point completely. Like, I mean, it is habit, it is routine that fell into it, and it's working for them because look how far they've got clearly. So they're probably, it's something you could definitely blame it on if it doesn't work out.
Well, this would be the hindsight thing, yeah. If they win, a 2 week break was great. If they lose, it'll be the opposite. What about Tramore then, Lee? Like, I mean, they weren't in the conversation at the start of this year really at all, and now they've won it. Very convincingly, really. Like, I mean, they won the second half 10-3 to win it by those 7 points. It was 5-all at half time. And now, look, I'm looking at their manager, Colin McCullough, who obviously won All-Ireland with Tyrone, definitely 2008. Well, he might have been on the panel in 2005. That they're a very young team, and he's talking about doing back-to-back, and it's like, Jesus, you know, this is some turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, Colin McCullough, he's a very ambitious fella. I was always a really big fan of his in Tyrone, because in 2008... Stevie O'Neill had retired the year before. Owen Mulligan was really out of form and out of favour, and like it was sort of like the Killian O'Connor thing this year, like where's Mayo going to get their scores? It was very like that for Tyrone that going into that year, and he stood up and he was a real star that year. He's a hero in Tramore as well.
He's an ex-soccer player though, isn't that all the story of him in, back then, that he was the soccer player that gave it up to play GAA?
That's exactly it, yeah. So he played like a semi-professional in the Northern Irish League, but he gave it up to give the GAA a proper whack. And for Tramore, he'd already won three titles as a player, and now he's won one as a manager. And straight away, he's talking about being like one of the first to retain a title. So like, he's just a hugely ambitious guy, and you gotta love it. But in the match itself, you know, at halftime, Killeen were probably the more comfortable, the more seasoned with the big games. Like Tramore were a little bit nervy. In the second half, though, they really came to life, and Niall Sludden sort of took to the front, and it was all about, well, you take no surprises in guessing, and McNabb was one of the stars of the show. Emmett McNabb in this occasion, you know, he scored 6 points in the game, and when you think of Tyrone as a county, and you think of the firepower that they have, and like, you know, Matty Donnelly, Darren McCurry, Derek Yanovan, Cal McShane, Connor McKenna, these really big names in the forward line. Emmett outscored all of them this year in the championship, you know, and he's only 23 years old. And I'd be very surprised if we didn't see him in the red and white of Tyrone in some capacity next year. Of course, that's up to him as well. But like you say, a very young team, and he's one of the people leading that line.
He need to do a good strength and conditioning program, though. He is he is light, isn't he? He's lovely left foot. And I actually thought in the last game, because it was early in the game where he had a chance off his right, and it was very obvious. You know these obvious left footers, he was kept trying to come back in on his left. I was like, geez, this chap is an old school 13 that has no right. And then he scored a lovely pint off his right in the second half, and I was wondering, Jesus, you know, like he has both feet. He is a little bit light. He probably needs to bulk up a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think Paul Donnelly, he was sort of like that last year. He came to the front, like he's a skinny fella. I know he's very tall, and he looks a lot stronger this year, and he must have been doing his strength and conditioning stuff. But that is all stuff that you can work on, you know, and I mean, it's up to him, obviously, if he's going to put in that work. He's only 23, so he's still naturally growing and everything else, you know, becoming a man and that. So I think, you know, he's got all the potential. He ticks all the boxes everywhere else. And just as from a Tyrone perspective, trying to take positives from it, you know, I'd love to see him involved. And he's one of I seen this stat. It was so the under 14 final in 2011 was Killeen v Dromore, and seven players who were on that team for Dromore were playing last night as well, himself included. So it's good to see, you know, that they're retaining their youth and they're coming through, and this is them all coming to the forefront now, and they've already got one senior title in their back pocket.
Jesus, seven from the under 14 team.
Yeah,
jeez, that's something. Like, I mean, they say you get three from a minor team to play senior, you know, you're doing well. Seven from an under 14 team. They're a very tight knit town, though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're very near Trillick, and Trillick would be very much the same. Just a little bit on the outskirts, not as near civilization. As
They're madmen in Dromore. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, football's everything to them. Absolutely. You only, well, like, look who's like Ryan McMenamin's from there, like, and that sort of answers enough questions. That sort of mentality, you know, football is everything to them boys. Like, and like Tiernan Sludden was definitely on that under 14 panel as well, you know, and Niall just would have been a couple of years older. But like, it's great to see that, you know, they're coming through the ranks. And we talked a little about like Glenn in previous years, a lot of their minor team had came to the front. So to go all the way back to under 14 and identify them, CM7 players, a lot of them in similar positions as well. Emmett was the nippy corner forward, you know, it was like, it's just brilliant to see, and it's a really good advertisement for the club.
Yeah, I kind of would class Tyrone as a county kind of madman, but imagine being the madman town of the madman county. That would, like, I mean, a few pints up in Dromore. I'd say Monday now would be very sweet up there in Dromore. You know, but the final, actually, wouldn't mind it getting someone from Dromore on the show, but the final finished so late. It finished late last night. It's a strange time for a county final, really, yeah. Lee.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very late in the night. There was a lot of people. There was just a lot of complaints about it, because first of all, there was the whole ticket thing. They were charging people under 16. I think it was £3 for kids to play when they weren't charging them, you know, throughout the championship. Ricey was talking at halftime. You know, he was there doing a bit of punditry, and he was mentioning, it was the first thing he mentioned, just about how, like, the Tyrone GA board and the GA in general trying to, like, sort of turn it into capitalism and all this kind of thing, and turn it into money. So people were annoyed about that. And then it turned out as well that TG Cahart did want to air the match.
Yeah.
They didn't want them to, because they'd lose out, you know, on the cash. Like, I had to pay for it as well. Like, so they've got my money anyway. But and then just the charging underage, I think, is what really rifled a few people. And then I think the time period, like the fact that it was on so late, was so that it wouldn't clash with any the other matches. You know, they were really thinking ahead of that, but they just weren't thinking of like all, you know, club final day. Like, it's a day celebration thing, you know, the match is on early enough, and then you really enjoy your evening and your night. But listen, they'll make up for it, you know. There'll be no shortage of celebrations all day today, tomorrow, and the rest of the week.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there will. Kilmacook Crokes and the Fianna gave us great entertainment on Saturday night. I was delighted I sat down to watch this one. Like, I mean, Jesus, Donald Burke scores a goal in the 51st minute, putting the Fianna 9 points ahead, and they've been the better team right up until then. And they'd never won it. And then they started to shit themselves. And you give Kilmacook Crokes a bit of credit for coming back. But even in the comeback, so they're 9 points down, Ronan Hayes managed to blast a penalty wide. And then not long after that, a very, very routine point off his left hand side went wide. And he screamed, you know, whatever he screamed to the crowd. And I was like, I was saying, geez, that poor chap, his head's gone now. And, you know, he's going to be the villain and he's the inter-county player. And incredibly, they ended up getting a goal. The midfielder, Oisín O'Rourke got it. The Nafina player tried to actually trip up the Kilmacud Crokes in setting it up the corner back, I think it was. He buried that from an impossible angle. You might blame the goalkeeper there. And then to leave it a finish with the last puck of the game coming down, and Ronan Hayes, just unbelievable that it came to him and he ran through the defence and stuck it in the corner. Like, as far as I was concerned, like, the game was pretty much over then. It was a draw, extra time. And Ronan Hayes scored 6 points in extra time. So he went from incredible mental strength from him. He went from me feeling incredibly sorry for him, going, ah, Jesus, you know, like, I mean, how will he recover from this? Like, to being the hero of the day. Like, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a turnaround like it.
Yeah, like, he missed a penalty. I think it was in the 55th minute.
Yeah.
And like, it was nearly high and it was wide as well. Like, it wasn't a great strike. And then 2 or 3 minutes later, the ball comes down to him. He was one-on-one with his man and you're thinking there's a goal on here. And he tried to rise the ball and he missed it twice. He eventually got it in his hands and hit it wide, like, from about 30 yards. And you're thinking, like, Ron Hayes is, like, his head is completely gone.
And at that point, he should have been trying to work a goal, I thought. Like, why was he even going for the point then?
There were 4 or 5 down at that stage, I'd say, yeah. So he was struggling and I could see him. He looked up at the sky and he was like, and you're thinking, this isn't going to be his night, like. But he comes back again and it was deep into added time and the ball comes across and it was a tough ball to win because the Nafina full back, he had his hurl in as well. I think it was Kevin Burke. He had his hurl in and he kind of swung across and Ronan Hayes just got in before him. Like, he showed, like, bravery kind of as well as sort of a bit of confidence to win it. And when he went on the run, he probably took steps, like, but they're never blowing for them.
No.
But you knew it was going in, like.
You did at that stage. It just looked, and you just knew then that when that final whistle went, Nafina were gone. They'd put so much into it. They'd never won it before. And now that just heartbreaking goal. Like, I mean, it's very hard to go out to extra time and try and lift yourself all over again. They looked like they were out on their feet.
There were so many stages during the game where you're thinking, like, Nafina have this game won again. Like, it was, I'm not sure how many points they were up by at half time, but when it got to 5 at half time, you're 50 minutes, you're up by 9. And then Ronan Hayes misses that penalty. And you're like, well, we are, like, we've got away with that one. Like, we've got away with the scare. We're home and hosed here. But, geez, they kind of, like, Kilmacud had another goal chance as well, just before Ronan Hayes one. Yeah. Like, and Nafina just seemed to
drop back a bit or
whether
something.
Whether it was tiredness or just kind of towards the finish and you're nearly there and you're just trying to kind of see it out and you're not really hurling anymore. And that's what it was like, and because they had played such brilliant hurling. They're a young team, like, and, like, the likes of Sean Curry.
He was very good, yeah.
Geez, his first half was, like, he was unbelievable, scoring points.
Yeah. And Owen O'Donnell said about him that he's, like, he's seen as the big thing now with Dublin because they need inside forwards. Because I wasn't sure, I hadn't heard about Sean Curry, but he must be only out of minor or something or under 21 because he said, we're waiting for him now. He's the one we're counting on or something to that effect.
This was his first year in the Dublin senior panelies. He's 22, right.
He's 22. Well, yeah. Then he can't be a great white. Like, usually the really top players, you know, have made an impact when they're 19 or 20.
Like, he was a good minor. So maybe it is strange enough that he hadn't been in the Dublin panel before this year. But I'd say after watching that performance now, well, the first half especially, like, the way he had a bit of a kind of a carefree about him. He was just, the first ball he got, the goalie hit a puck out to him and he just boomed it into the night. Like, he wasn't...
There was a bit of a Peter Casey about him or something.
Yeah, there was no fear or anything. But, like, you're kind of thinking now for Dublin, if they've a... You could have a full forward line of him and Ronan Hayes. Like, we were watching the game in the house and we said, Ronan Hayes, like, if you're trying to build a hurler, like, he has everything, like, because not only is he tall and strong, like, he's also fast and he's got brilliant hands, like, brilliant kind of stylish strike. Like, do you know the way sometimes lads say it's probably wrong that Dublin don't have these sort of stylish forwards who can maybe score from... Like, from not much of an opportunity. Like, he could score from anywhere because he's just so skillful. And if you had the two of them inside, like, it'd be a good full forward line.
Yeah, maybe it would. So, like, I was thinking that this extra time is a bit cruel, Lee. Like, I mean, whatever, because you want to run off a knockout championship pretty quickly and all that kind of thing, and we understand that, or whether it's a knockout championship or not. But I do agree that, you know, replays in quarterfinals, semifinals, and pushing the whole thing out. But a lot of counties are not going to extra time in their finals. They're having replays, and I don't know. Like, I think Nafina deserved the replay in that match, you know, because they were gone after extra time, the way it turned out. And I was just thinking, Tullamore obviously beat Roge yesterday in the replay. 2 weeks they got to lick their wounds after a similar devastating end where they're 4 points up and Niall McNamee gets 1-1. And if that game went to extra time with Tullamore and Roge, you would be saying Roge have their tails up here. They'll probably go on and win this. Tullamore are devastated. Do you know what I mean? Do you think for counties, they should just standardise this, that a county final... And I know we were talking as well about Clock Ballacolla. They had Willie Dunphy stagged the next week. And that's the last thing they wanted, was a bloody replay, because psychologically players kind of want the thing ended that day. But I don't know. Like, what do you think's the fairest for county final? A replay? Are you happy enough? Like, Kilmacud won't be arguing about the extra time, I suppose, if you look at it from their point of view.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I have to disagree with you. I'm a fan of the extra time. Like, I mean, it's a big ask. I understand that completely. And I know we're saying that, like, so with Ronan Hayes in that situation, you know, the pendulum of momentum completely started to swing towards Kilmacud Crokes, and Nafina, maybe they couldn't recover from that. But, like, I wouldn't say that that's unfair that happened. You know, I mean, you got to look at, if you look at it really harshly, the fact, we, you know, like, from a neutral's point of view, you sort of want to see Nafina do it, you know, because it's the first time and stuff, and you love to be a part of that story. But, like, if they conceded a goal that late in the game, like, it's still on them. You know, we shouldn't reward them with, like, an extra 2 weeks to lick their wounds and then come back again for it. You know, they just have to deal with the consequences there and then. Kilmacud Crokes, they had the momentum, and then that would have been much the same situation with Roge and Tullamore. Niall McNamee's goal went in, and then their tails would have been up, and you imagine they would have pushed on. But, you know, it's not guaranteed either. You know, it's a lot of great finals are go to extra time, and both teams get a little something from it as well. Like Dungannon Clarks, you know, they wouldn't have finished the game last year if we had to keep going to a replay after every game that they're involved in. But I don't know, I just think it's still on the day. And then you got to put it due to preparation as well. Like, if the teams know beforehand that there's extra time, then you got to be preparing for that, you know, whether that's to do with your conditioning or just psychologically, even talking about the possibility of that so it doesn't catch you cold when it does happen. Like, you know, soccer teams, when they're preparing for finals or in international tournaments and stuff, they always practice penalties. You know, they don't go into the game looking for it to go to penalties by no means, but they know that it's a possibility. So they practice it on the changing ground and, you know, get their heads around it beforehand. So extra time, I mean, it's harsh, but I still think it's maybe the fair of the two.
What do you think, Niall? Like, I mean, I'm not arguing for an abolishment of extra time. I just think in finals, you know, something like that. I do it. Maybe I'm being influenced a little bit by feeling bad for Nafina, who had been so good, you know, in that game. But generally, the smash and grab team towards the end of a game, they have the momentum then, and, you know, for extra time. Where, you know, is that fair? It's not like I don't want to sound like we're rewarding Nafina. You just have a policy that regardless of who comes back late, even if it is Nafina, that the policy is a replay and the county board get an extra payday, I suppose. It can be a bit frustrating for players, the few players who do want it ended on the day. I don't know. Most counties have the replay policy, really, don't they?
Like, it should probably be a uniform sort of a thing, I'd say, like, because for Nafina, they're probably looking over at, say, someone like
Tipperary yesterday has gone to a replay.
Yeah, like in Tipperary, and that's gone to a replay, and they're like, well, like, why is it a replay there and we're not getting a replay? Like, it's probably, it should be like the same in every county, I'd say. But yeah, it is a tough one. Like, it's kind of Nafina, like, I know, like, they were dead men walking, weren't they? Like, you just knew it was gone. Like, and
yeah, it was just so heartbreaking to throw away the 9 points. And, like, I mean, then, like, we're saying Tullamore beat Roge, and they got the 2 weeks to get over it. They won an under-20 county title on the Thursday before it. That probably gave them a good distraction, you know, and now they've confidence back after winning that. And they destroyed Roge yesterday. Roge only had two scores. Anton O'Sullivan scored 1-1. That was a stoppage time consolation penalty. And Rory McNamee scored 3 points. So a really, really convincing win for Tullamore, you know, so maybe that balance of power might be slightly shifting. Like Niall McNamee, who was the hero, didn't get a score. Like, talk about learning from the first day now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they obviously, like, they would have been so sick in the way that first game ended, like, because they probably should have just known to sort of stick with Niall McNamee. And we talked about that goal there was kind of poor defending involved in conceding it, like, and like, fair play to Tullamore. People would have probably thought coming into this game, like, that they're kind of the underdogs and they've had their chance now. And, like, you'd nearly compare Road to Kilkenny back in the day whenever it went to a replay. Like, Road will take care of this. But Tullamore were obviously the better team the first day. Well, the fact that Alan McNamee was gone might have influenced that. But they were definitely the better team here. And yeah, definitely deserved a win. It's the first since, I think, it was 2013. So it was definitely a great win for them.
Yeah, and they're winning at underage now. So we might see Tullamore taking over Road as the big team in Offaly. A shout out to Kevin O'Brien, who's a colleague of ours in the media. He's a GA journalist with the 42. He's wing back for Tullamore. So he's flying the flag, you know, showing that, listen, we don't just talk about GA. Some of us actually play it as well. Interestingly, with Kevin, his father, Benny, won a county title with St. Bridget's in Roscommon in 1997. He was a selector in 2013 when they won the All-Ireland Club, and he managed St. Bridget's in Roscommon to a county title last year. So that's a nice little one. I saw Kate Curran congratulating him last night, Lee, that the family now have won two county titles in two different counties.
Yeah, it's brilliant, you know, and showing that journalists can actually walk the walk and not just talk the talk. Not in this situation, obviously. I just talk the talk. Niall's a TV star now as well, so he'll be leaving the GAA world, I'm sure. But no, fair play to Kevin. He's actually out there doing it. And yeah, I mean, it's unreal.
Yeah, good for him. Good for GAA journalists all over the country as well for a county title. We'll all kind of celebrate this on Kevin's behalf. So Cross McGlenn were shocked in Armagh. Clonairn scored two late goals to win it for the first time in 53, I read, in 58 years. Anyways, our former senior analyst, Stevie MacDonald, was at this one and he joins us on the show now. Welcome back to the show, Stevie.
Good man, Wally. It's been a while since I've been on, so it's great to be back.
Well, you're too busy for us now. You see, that's the problem.
Too busy. I'm still trying to build a business up, you know, so dedicate more time for it.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, so you were at this match. Hey, from reading the reports on this, Stevie, Cross McGlenn were completely coasting.
They were coasting in terms of the scores, but in terms of the overall play, Clonairn were very much in the game. I thought they were very controlled in possession. Probably it was 50-50 in terms of possession of the ball.
Right.
And the one thing that impressed me about Clonairn throughout was they didn't score for the first 15 minutes of the game, and they didn't score for the first 15 minutes of the second half. But they never seemed to panic. They kept chipping away, even though Cross McGlenn went into a 6-point lead in the second half. They never panicked and kept chipping away at scores. And when goal opportunities presented themselves, particularly the first one, they were ruthless with taking it.
Yeah, it was Rory MacDonald. It says a spectacular goal. What kind of a goal was this one, the first one?
Yeah, Rory MacDonald. From my memory, it was a kick out caught by Ryan Henderson down the far wing, and a fantastic ball in. It was very much a 50-50 ball, but he won it over two Cross McGlenn players, turned, and he was kind of hesitant in terms of, was he going to go direct for goal or take the point? But once he seen the gap opening up, he went straight for goal, and from about probably about 20 yards out, rifled the ball to the roof of the net. It was a spectacular goal and a great finish. And people might say that the keeper could have done better, but the pace that the ball was kicked at, I believe certainly it was unstoppable.
Well, this is what you've always told us when you're on the show, Stevie. If in doubt, drive your boot through it.
Yeah, put the ball as hard as you can. You know, how often do we see goals placed and put into bottom corners? Is not too often. You know, I believe the best way of going for goal is get your foot through it as hard as you can. And Rory MacDonald certainly done that, and it gave the goalkeeper no real option. You know, very little time to react to it, and it definitely was a goal worthy of winning the championship final. But certainly the second goal they got was very very lucky
this,
indeed.
Yeah, this was a fluke, right?
It was a fluke, there's no doubt about it, but it was a big mistake and a big blunder on behalf of the Cross McGlenn goalkeeper, and you have to feel sorry for him. He was absolutely distraught at the end of the game. But you know, from where I was sitting, it was a lofted ball into the goal mouth area, and you always say if you get the ball in there, anything can happen. It actually bounced over the full forward and the full back. I think it was James Morgan was competing in there at the time, and it bounced over their head, and I actually thought that it was bouncing over the bar, and the goalkeeper thought that it was going wide, and it ended up bouncing right into the top corner of the goal. Jeez. And hit the crossbar, hit the post, and came across the goal and into the goal. It was, listen, it's a goal that you wouldn't see too often happening, and you know, obviously the goalkeeper was in a much better position and thought that, you know, it was certainly going wide. That's all I can take it. And I was letting it go wide, but it caught him unawares. It was a huge shock to everyone. But listen, the Canarn player put it in the mixer. And once it's in there, anything can happen. And it was certainly a very, very lucky goal. So it was, and it put them a point up. But after that, Rian O'Neill kicked over a fantastic free from probably 50, 55 yards to draw level. But right. Once again, Clonairn had a couple of minutes and they showed tremendous composure. Conor Turbitt, who was exceptionally good throughout the game, kicked a fantastic score from play, and then he kicked the point from a free to seal the deal.
Right, so I was thinking maybe that late goal, there was more action after it. Turbitt then was the match winner. He's really kind of pushing on, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a fantastic inside forward. Listen, he would walk into any club team in Armagh. His movement, his willingness to show for the ball, and his ability to take men on and get scores from play and be a very reliable free taker as well is very important to the Clonairn team. And I thought he was exceptional yesterday. Listen, he scored 8 points. I think 4 of them were from play. It shows his capabilities as a forward. But throughout, you know, I was really impressed with the Clonairn team, particularly Ryan Henderson. Ryan Henderson's 37, 38 years old now. He started the game at 11, but he played everywhere. He played as a sweeper, he played in the half-back line, he played a wing half-back, he was an option for kicks. But he was the link player between defence and attack, and really got the team moving and gelling together. But man for man, Clonairn were very much worth their victory. I thought they were very good. Cross McGlenn had some very good individual performance as well. It was the best that I've seen James Morgan play in quite a while. I thought he was very, very good. He scored an exceptionally good point as well. Rian O'Neill, in and out of the game, once again, come up with 4 or 5 points, couple of exceptionally good points, and no, none more so than the one that drew the game level with time almost up. But it wasn't enough. Cian McConville was good further away from goals, but once he got in close to goals, Clonairn had their homework done and snuffed out his threat. So, you know, overall, if you're a Clonairn supporter, you'd be very, very happy with how your team performed. I thought even in the first 15 minutes of the game, you would think that they would be very jittery and nervous, but they were very composed on the ball and didn't let the occasion get to them, even though they didn't score in that period.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, if you're a Clonairn supporter, you'd be very, very tipsy right now by the time this show well, this show goes out.
I wouldn't think it'd be tipsy at all. I'd be very
God,
drunk.
God past tipsy. Where, Stevie, where have they come from? I have to hold my hands up and say I don't know anything about Clonairn. Like, they beat Ballymacnab in the semi-final, now Cross McGlenn. Like, is this been completely out of left field, or have you been expecting these to make a breakthrough?
No. Clonairn have put in I suppose, a template 20 years ago. And I think it was a 20-year plan that they wanted to implement to win a championship within 20 years. This started in the year 2000, and it took them 21 years, but, you know, they went and done it. They've had a good bit of success in the last decade at underage level. A lot of those players coming through, the likes of Barry McCambridge, Tiernan Kelly, you know, even Conor Turbitt, they would have had success at underage level, so right. they're used to winning. Shea Heffron, boys have got they've tasted success. They've been coached exceptionally well over the last 15-20 years, and the club is well run at underage level, and therefore eventually these talented players were going to make the breakthrough. Don't forget, they also beat in the first round, they beat Mary. So they did.
Right, Mario were the
reigning champions as well. So they beat probably the three most consistent teams in Armagh over the last 6-7 years in terms of Mary, Ballymacnab and Cross McGlenn. So, you know, they fully deserve their victory yesterday.
Right. Could there be a changing of the guard here? Like, I mean, Crossmaglen lost the final last year. They've lost this final. Is the aura gone away from Crossmaglen? Now, they still have a good team, but they're not. They don't have a games won before they go out, maybe, like they used to.
Listen, Crossmaglen would always bounce back. There's no denying their capabilities to do that. But what yesterday does, it probably instilled a bit more belief throughout the county that within other teams as well, that they can possibly take on Crossmaglen. My own team, Cleavey, got beat by them last year in the semi-final by a point.
Yeah.
We played them this year in the quarter-final, and the game was all square with 5 minutes left, and we got a man sent off, and Crossmaglen pulled away at that stage. So, you know, there's teams knocking on the door at the minute and having more belief when they're playing Crossmaglen, and that's only going to be better overall for Armagh football as a whole. But listen, would you rule Crossmaglen out in the next couple of years? Absolutely not. You'd be foolish to do that. They still have underage teams coming through that are pretty successful as well. And Crossmaglen, you know, take one or two young players through to the senior team every year that are very successful and gel into the team quite comfortably as well. So I wouldn't rule them out, but I would say that other teams throughout the county will take a lot of belief from Clannern winning yesterday and also from Mary winning last year. You know, that's now a couple of years that Crossmaglen haven't won it. In the past, when they haven't won it, they bounced back the following year and won it. So
right.
They weren't a million miles away yesterday, but Clannern were, you know, fully deserving of their victory.
One last word before you go on Cleavey. You've obviously mentioned them. When you were on the show, Cleavey weren't up, you know, nearly beating Crossmaglen. Where's this improvement come from?
Listen, there's a crop of young players coming through now. We haven't had a lot of success at underage level. We were beating the minor final a few years ago. We won the under-19 league there just 2 weeks ago. So there's young players that are very, very talented players. Cleavey have always had talented players, but listen, they're only knocking on the door. Ultimately, I believe for Cleavey to kick on, they have to beat the likes of Crossmaglen in a game. They've been very close in the last few years, but they have to look at the Astros final and take some belief from that as well, because Clannern come off from Division 1B this year and won the championship. So why can Cleavey not do it? You know, we finished fourth in Division 1A, so certainly it opens the door not only for Cleavey, for the likes of Barry McNabb to have more belief, the likes of Graham Moore, teams that, you know, are really competitive in league football, but certainly can kick on as well.
Yeah, listen, it definitely does give all the clubs in Armagh a bit of belief. Stevie, thanks very much for filling us in on that one.
No problem, Colin.
Yeah, good stuff from Stevie there. Like, it's interesting, Lee. Like, I mean, I mentioned this at the top of the show. You have Cara Finn losing, you have Crossmaglen losing, you have Portlaoise losing, you have Coola losing in Dublin, not in the final, but earlier on, the Piercy out in Limerick. You have Aeroge in Carlow going for 5 in a row and beaten. It hasn't been a good year for the super clubs around the country.
No, it hasn't. And you can even throw in Derry, Slackneil and Corrigan from Antrim in that sort of category.
And St. Vincent's in Dublin. It's been a disaster for the big clubs, yeah.
Yeah, look, we've talked a little already about it being like the year of the underdog. We've mentioned that in a couple of the shows, but maybe it's the year of the decline as well, because that's another factor of it. And it's sort of fitting that, you know, like at the turn of the decade, like 2021 is when like the GAA landscape seems to be changing across. The sign of a good team is, you know, a team that wins something, but like the really, really great teams, it's the longevity, they win stuff and then they stay up there. And the challenge, the real challenge behind that is having your transition years but still managing to win trophies, you know, by bringing players through, losing players, but it's still all keeping at a certain standard where you can bring home silverware. But everything works in cycles, the GAA included. And like, you know, it's sometimes like the younger, the next batch of players through just, you know, just aren't as good as their predecessors. So there's just a lot of people retire or get injured all at the same time. And there's just new blood from the different clubs and they're really improving and coming to the front. So it's just, you know, the end of a lot of these team cycles, but you know, they'll come again.
Yeah, probably being a bit harsh on Crossmaglen, who are a young team, and Aeroge, who are a young team. I don't think they're going anywhere. Portlaoise definitely in trouble. St. Vincent's definitely in trouble. Cara Finn probably look like they're a little bit tired and in trouble. Coola probably look like they're tired and in trouble. Probably a bit harsh on the Piercy too, Niall, am I? It's just a bad year. I'm not saying all these teams are being written off. It's just a bad year for the big teams.
Yeah, like all those clubs you've mentioned, like they've been brilliant over nearly the guts of a decade. Like, and I suppose like when after there's only so long you could keep that going for.
Yeah.
And sometimes when there's young lads coming in, there was a few new faces in the Cora Finn team yesterday, and they just, like, obviously they're not going to be as good as the lads that, like, some of the lads that were there before them are still there, but there's some, maybe the few lads are gone and there's new lads in, and it changes up the team, and it can be hard to keep it going, like, when, I suppose, when the team is changing and there's more young clubs snapping at your heels, like, so.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So Partarlington won in Laois. I was up at this one. They won very, very easily. Like, I mean, you know, they were 1-3 to no score up after 7 minutes, and, like, you're wondering, you know, there was a very kind of contrast to the two styles of both teams. Like, Partarlington were fast, they were moving the ball fast down the field, kicking it a lot, whereas Portlaoise were incredibly laboured, using the hand pass way too much. Every single one of their attacks seemed to end up in, you know, the stalemate situation where Port weren't overly defensive, but they'd have 10 lads back and Portlaoise couldn't get through them, and they're moving the ball over and back the field. Dreadfully boring to watch. And then they take a pot shot, you know, when they get frustrated and nothing's really come, you know, there's no gaps appearing, and they end up kicking it wide. I think they're 10 wides in the first half, but they weren't 10 wides where you go, you know, this was a close game. Partarlington were incredibly impressive team. I have to say, 2-7 to 2 points up at half time, and the game was over. Like I said, play a lovely, lovely brand of football. A brand of football that Portlaoise would have played down through the years. Kick passing a lot of running off the ball. You know, moving the ball fast, getting the ball up to your forwards, and a nice bit of interplay. So, like, I mean, Partarlington, without a shadow of a doubt, I was trying to talk up potentially Portlaoise, because they were decent in the second half, or in the semi final against Ballarone. But that just shows how poor Ballarone were. Partarlington are by far and away the best team in Laois. You know, arguably, they'll give Leinster a rattle on yesterday's evidence. They're very, very, very good. Their manager, Martin Murphy, incidentally, that's his fourth county title. So he has two with Partarlington. Partarlington are like Clock Ballacolla in Laois. Last year's delayed finals. So they won one 13 weeks ago, and now they've won another one. It's not easy to do it back to back. Only Portlaoise have been, you know, able to do that in recent years. But Martin Murphy, that's his fourth county title in Laois, and it's his third one to beat Portlaoise in. So they won it in 2005 against Portlaoise and with Stradbally, when they would have been really, really strong underdogs, because Portlaoise were in the All-Ireland Club final that same year. And they stopped Portlaoise doing 10 in a row in 2016. So Portlaoise don't like Martin Murphy very much. But I have to say, he gets his teams playing very, very... I think he's an Offaly man from Gracefield or somewhere like that. He has Partarlington playing great stuff, and they have good players in the right positions. You know, Robbie Pigott, centre-back, Paddy O'Sullivan, who was outstanding at moving the ball fast yesterday. A good mobile midfield, and their full forward line, you know, is very good as well. So, like, I mean, a very, very good team. Very impressive, very disappointed from Portlaoise's point of view, the way they played. But unfortunately, from Portlaoise's point of view, there's new kids on the block, Lee, and we just have to suck it up. We've dished out a good few hammerings in county finals, and we have to just take the bitter pill of being on the receiving end of it. We're not used to it, and it was a weird match to watch, but look, that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you were sort of building them up last week, and then just before we talked about Laois last week, we were talking about Tyrone and siege mentality and making everyone, you know, trying to make everyone out against you and stuff. So I reckon there was maybe pictures of you up in the changing rooms, all the quotes from the GAR, and throw a dartboard maybe next to it, and they used that as fuel. But no, I mean, it was fantastic. There was, from their point of view, to win two titles in, what was it, like 13 weeks, just because of the delayed 2020 season. Yeah. And then I think they won a league, they pick up a league in between that as well. So, I mean, what, you know, a roller, not even a roller coaster, I mean, because it's all upwards, you know, they're just loving it this last couple of months. And then I did, we're sort of talking off air, I read about it. This is actually the second time that they've won two championships in a calendar year. They won the delayed 1954 title and then a couple of months later won the 1955 title as well. So to be a team to actually do this really unusual thing twice, that must be unheard of.
Yeah, definitely. And I mentioned a good few of the Partarlington players. Colin Murphy, obviously, who's a Laois full forward, corner forward. He's playing his brother David Murphy, who I would have played with Laois a long time ago. He's up 36, probably 37 now. And they have Jake Foster, who's only a small little fella, and he hasn't played with Laois seniors. But Jesus, like we were talking about Emmett McNabb, you know, he's a very, very good scorer, and he's a flyer, and he's a disaster to mark. So, and they have a Coffey at centre forward, who's a lovely player as well. Like I said, just play a lovely brand of football and are a very good team. So when they won, obviously, their first county title in about 20 years, 13 weeks ago, they obviously couldn't go into a Leinster club. I was texting a few different lads, and there is a big tradition in Laois that whoever wins in Laois, the whole county row behind them. And I'd have no problem rowing behind Port Arlington after watching them yesterday. They were outstanding. And I think they can give it to anyone in Leinster. I'm really, really impressed with them now. So they play the Westmeath champions in 2 weeks' time. Westmeath final obviously went to a replay. I think they have that at home, and then they have the Dublin champions at home. So look, we'll see how they go. Maybe I'm overrating them from a poor Laois championship. I don't know. We'll know soon enough, I suppose, Niall, when they get into that Leinster.
I was just feeling a bit sorry for you yesterday, Willie. I was following the scores on this, and sure, I knew you were at the game, and you could have been watching a Tipperary hurling final that was going all the way at the same time. So, but yeah, after all you've said there, I have to say I'm looking forward to watching Port Arlington. The kind of the mix of the youth and a bit of experience as well, and playing with a bit of pace and a bit of kind of adventure too, which is exciting. So it'll be interesting to see how they go, and hopefully they fly the flag for Laois.
I was walking out with Mannix yesterday, and Itzy and Aria, and we're walking across. I think it was about I was up the far end, and I wanted to walk out. It was about 54 minutes gone, and I said, I'll see out the last few minutes down at the very end and be able to get out the gate straight away. And I was walking past the Port Arlington subs, and you know, there was a sideline ball went over that they were contesting, and he says, you know, they were giving out, that's a port ball, just as well it's not close or something, you know, kind of half jeering. And I was like, I will be mentioning this if you're in a Port Laois dressing room. You'd be definitely saying this if they play them next year. But look, congratulations to Port Arlington. I mentioned that they play the Westmeath champions, and that's gone to a replay. So they'll have to play the replay next week and then play Port Arlington the following week. Desi Dolan came back, 42. So he retired in 2019 after the loss in the Leinster club to Ballyboden. He hasn't played since then. He's been training away apparently with Gary Castle. He got a hamstring injury. His first appearance the whole year, Niall, is coming on with something like 10 minutes to go in a county final. It was a bizarre one at 42 years of age. A retired 42-year-old who hadn't played in 2 years, hadn't played all year. If I was a sub on that team and I saw that, I'd be like, here, good luck for the replay.
I was just going to say, like, only it's Desi Dolan.
Well, yeah, obviously a legend. Yeah.
One of the best ever footballers to play for Westmeath. I'd say the subs would have been going mad, like, because... Like, I remember him retiring, and that seems, it was 2019, like, that's a while ago now. And especially for a 42-year-old, a lad like that, do you know, like, you'd want to be training. Like, they're saying he's training on his own. I don't know how much he's doing, but you'd want to be training with the team at that age. And it's a strange one, but look, they didn't lose the game anyway.
No, John Keane explained it. John Keane, obviously, ex-Westmeath All-Star and teammate of Desi. Gary is the Gary Castle manager, which, you know, if you were a sub, you'd be like, yeah, okay, Desi, you're a legend and everything. Your brother's manager, mate, and you retired 2 years. But John Keane explained, he says, everyone in Gary Castle knows he's training, but outside of everybody in Gary Castle knows he's training, but everyone outside of it just thinks he's tipping along. He pulled a hammer early in the year, but I suppose a shorter season suits him down to the ground. That's him kind of explaining it. So look, St. Lomans got the last point to draw. St. Lomans have been in their seventh consecutive final. They won 4 out of 6 before this weekend. A very interesting one came up towards the end, Lee. And you know, we're completely anti-fisting points on this show, completely. But there is an occasion in a game where it's completely and utterly acceptable to fist a point. And that is, you're a point up. This is the last attack of the game, or the referee will allow the opposition one attack after this attack. You're allowed fist past a point on that occasion to put two in it, and then you make sure that the opposition have to come up the other end of the field and score a goal rather than draw it with a point. That's not what happened in this game. Alex Gardner, who apparently had a brilliant game other than this, and I don't want to single him out because we all make mistakes. So John Heston scored a 40-metre free to put 1 point in it. From the kick out, Alex Gardner caught it, ran down the field and ended up one-on-one with the goalkeeper. This was the last attack of the game, or pretty much. Alex Gardner went for the goal. Now, Keane Ward would be very proud of him, doesn't matter at what time. But had Alex Gardner hand passed that point, that over the bar, Lohmann's got one more attack. As it happens, the goalkeeper, Jason Daly, made the save, kept one in it. Lohmann's got a little lift. Lohmann's went up the field and John Heslin equalised. You have to fist that over the bar, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, well, you live and die by these decisions, don't you? Because if it had hit the net, you know, he'd have been the hero on the day and we'd be sitting here talking about, you know, why you always have to put it in the net and be brave and going for goal and fortune favours the brave and every other cliche that you can think of. But I mean, like a big part of me still respects him in that situation because I just, you know, I don't have that in me to be in that situation right at the end of the game, bowing down on goal, knowing rightly that the easy option is also the correct option. But if I gamble here, like I've catapulted us, you know, to the trophy, and I was really brave in doing so and definitely naming the back pages. It would have been full of confidence as well. I think he'd scored 4 points, only one of them was from free, so 3 from play. And yeah, but you know, the keeper made the save and fair play to him on that, but he made the wrong decision. You gotta just fist it over the bar at that situation. And it's one of the very few situations that, or if you're at a really weird sort of angle. But in that situation, yeah, he had to do it. And it'd be interesting to see in the replay then if he's in a similar situation, what he goes for.
Yeah, I think you have to fist the ball because, you know, like, I mean, it's very, very, there are freak occasions where the opposition will go up and score a goal. But like, I mean, that happens maybe one time out of 100. Like the right thing to do here is fist that ball over the bar, put huge pressure on the kick out, you know, and just close the game out. And that's it. John Keane defended him. Again, I don't want to be too hard on Alex, who was very good in the match again. Like I said, he said, we always tell Alex to go for a goal when it's on. Without him, we wouldn't be here, you know, that he'd played so well. But like, I suppose that's just Alex taking instruction from a manager and just running with it, in you know, like, I mean, we always, I'll change that for John Keane. We always tell Alex to go for the goal when it's on, except if it's our last, it's the last attack of the game and we want to go 2 up, you know, like, I mean, I suppose that's it.
Yeah, I would have probably fisted it over the bar, but I have a lot of respect for Alex Gardner. Those fisted his points, I think they should be banned.
You can't fist slitters over the bar, so I don't know what
you can't hand pass goals, you can't hand pass slitters over the bar. Gaelic football needs to just get rid of that fist to pint.
Well, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. If you did away with it altogether, I don't think the game would lose anything. I don't think it's a huge skill, full stop. Craigan Kickhams, this is the last one. We don't have two. Rathvilly obviously beat A Rogue, and that was a huge win. Shelmaliers won in Wexford, very big win. They won the hurling last year, win the football this year. Penalty drama in Cork. There's more COVID drama in Galway, which we might talk about on Thursday. Craigan lifted the first one since 1954 after all the heartbreak, Lee, which is fantastic. Won it easily too, like, I mean, you know, over St Mary's, Ahagallan.
Yeah, and I think Ahagallan was playing with a sort of a sweeper keeper the whole game, a bit of a Niall Morgan situation going on. And late on in the game, he got caught out pretty badly. The ball broke and it sort of flew over his head and it just fell to the Craigan forwards, who had a big open gaping goal with loads of options in front of them. And as soon as that went in, you know, it was sort of story over. But it was just nice to see a change in Antrim in general. You know, Corrigan have been very dominant, and if it's not Corrigan, it's usually St Gall's. So, you know, to have two different finalists, Ahagallan will take a lot from that, getting to their first ever final. You know, they can take confidence from it. Craigan finally getting over the line, you know, because they've been the annoyed neighbours of Corrigan for so long, and to get their first title since the 60s. I mean, that's absolutely huge for them. And, you know, I know a couple of Craigan boys and they're already talking about Ulster, which is one of the weird ones because, like, you know, talking to the Glen ones and whoever else, you know, they're not even thinking about it. Or it's not, you know, it wasn't one of the first things that came to their thought anyway. I'm sure they're prepared now. But them boys, they did have an eye on it. You know, it's something that they've always wanted to give a whirl at, and now they get the opportunity to.
So they haven't won a county title since 1954, and these lads win it and they're talking about Ulster club titles.
No, in fairness, like, it's a lot of boys' brothers and stuff they're talking to me.
Right, okay, that's okay.
It's one of the first things that they were saying. They're super excited. I think it's the day out as well. And like I said, they're so used to watching Corrigan compete in them situations and in them tournaments, and they would have so many relatives, you know, playing for them, but also really hoping that they lose.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, like, supporters are allowed to say things like this, but there's one time I will allow a cliche. When I said to Niall Deasy about Ballygunner, oh, well, we're not thinking about Ballygunner. You know that cliche, oh, we don't want to think about it. On the Monday after the county final, you don't want to think about it. Like, I mean, it's the furthest thing from your mind. And if somebody started talking about the Leinster, the Munster, Ulster club on the Monday after county final, you say, go away. What are you talking about? There's plenty of time to talk about that. But anyways, that's just my experience of it anyways. Right, listen, that's all we've time for today. We've probably gone over time, and apologies to any club that we haven't given a bit of time to. It's very hard when there's not that many games on television, but I think we covered a good bit today. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview whatever weekend's club finals that there is as well. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.